heard about this thing on KQED on Thursday, and I was like, I gotta come here and finally get my, you know what, to do something. So I really, I'm looking for some way of getting involved around my other parts of my life.
So does everyone here have a sense that it exists?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And is everyone in this room because they want a means of action, that they want to get engaged and involved? To describe this group in terms of your connection to this issue, does anyone have a connection to this issue because of their work? Okay. So the people, I know Sam Figueroa, who's with law enforcement, some of you others on this side of the room, what is your connection through your work? We met last night.
Yeah. How about 12 to 19.
How about anybody else? Yes.
I'm Arthur Camp from California Against Slavery. I'm here with my colleague Kate, and we're working to strengthen human trafficking laws in the state of California. And passing a ballot initiative in November 2012.
Thank you for what you do. That's an outstanding ballot initiative. We met last night, and you weren't sure that you could make it here today, so it means a lot that you found a way to be here, so thank you for coming. What I think is clear when we hear why people have come is that we are all bound together by an appreciation for something that's going on in this community. And what many don't realize is what I think most of us in this room do realize, and that is that it's the most hidden form of child abuse in our society today. Next. The facts, briefly, and they're hard to really get the facts because no one's out there quantifying this, right? So these are studies and they're estimates, and I've taken the more conservative numbers, but we know that there's a lot of it going on, upwards of 325,000 a year, and there's a large percentage that come from shelter youth, street youth. I talked to somebody last night that works in that area, actually, almost exclusively trying to support children that are trafficked after running from foster care situations. And here in California, we see more of it than elsewhere in the United States. Oakland is, unfortunately, almost an open-air market, driving down a boulevard called International Boulevard. And when you drive down the street, you really can't believe that children are out there in the way that they are. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But it is the epicenter of a trafficking triangle, and we're in it, the trafficking triangle. Since 2006, the Oakland Police Department, and these stats, I just have to say, are about 8-9 months old. You can see the numbers. I'm not going to read the PowerPoint. Can everyone actually see this PowerPoint slide? Can anyone not see the PowerPoint slide?
You might need to move that back.
Shall I move that back? Does that work? Is that good? Okay. Since 2006, we have quite a large number. But what's important about that number is that in almost every case, there's a nexus between the exploitation and technology. So there's some nexus with the internet. The HEAT unit was formed in 2005 in the Alameda County District Attorney's Office. HEAT stands for Human Exploitation and Trafficking. And we are here today to try to stop the HEAT. HEAT victims, we see the majority are US citizens, but not all of them. Many of them are 13 to 15 years old. Some we've seen as young as 11, and the median age of entry these days is typically 12. Many of our traffickers and Johns are US citizens. In fact, most of them are. And that's part of the issue that a lot of people have difficulty getting their mind around, that we are talking with this child commercial sex trade in America about Americans exploiting Americans. And a lot of the focus has been on the international issue.
It just turned off.
Okay.
You might just have to go from here.
Okay. So, sorry about the technical difficulties that we're having. So, you all have, does everyone have this handout with them? We're going to improvise. Okay, so let's just, we'll just go off until Maya can help us with this. We will go off the, handout, and I'm very sorry for the technical difficulties. So, the heat unit stats document a rapidly growing problem. Now, if you look at the chart, and I hope everyone can see that chart on your handout, we have, and it's even hard for me to see because it's in fairly small type. I think mine might be smaller than yours. But since the passage of the human trafficking law in January 1 of 06, and I'm now on the far right column of your chart, the heat unit, this is not me personally, this is everyone in the unit, has charged 177 defendants, our office has charged them, and 148 cases have come. Of those cases, we have convicted 116 of felony trafficking-related convictions. That's a number, thank you, that I have to say I'm proud of on our office's behalf, and it's a number that is the result of a collaborative effort. No one person got that number. I'm here talking about the numbers. Those numbers aren't my numbers. A few of them are, not all of them are. And what is critical is how we get there. And that's what I hope to show you today, how we can get there. And you know, you might be saying, well, I'm not a prosecutor. But you know what? It takes a village to get the result that we're looking for. And there is the need to ensure accountability and hold the traffickers accountable. And it's one of the greatest challenges in this area. And we're going to talk about why. But there is so much going on with this population that it is very hard to ensure that they're on the train when the train pulls into the courtroom. It requires support from advocates that are trained. It requires community members to have their eyes and ears open so that they can see these children on the street and help identify them. It requires that same open mind without judgment from law enforcement's part to participate and deem it as important a case as a murder case or as important a case where a stranger gets raped. So judgment is very important. It's important to approach them, the population with a victim-centered, trauma-informed approach so you have an understanding for what they've gone through. It's not as if somebody just fell down and skinned their knee. The child that comes to you is a child that has suffered a lifetime of trauma. It's tough enough. I mean, we can all harken back to when we were kids. It was tough, right? Remember 12, 13, you're finding yourself. And you know, everything's awkward. Your hormones start to come in. You know, puberty starts. The whole dynamic is so challenging, and no one feels they look good or know what to say. And that's a child that's had a privileged life, feels that way, right? That's a child that has had no trauma in their life. So these children really are targeted for a very specific reason. And it's not a reason that many understand. And it's a reason that requires an emotional and sympathetic response. And it's a reason that requires absolutely no judgment. But the reason why we have as many traffickers as we do, like on the one hand, it's great that we got these convictions. On the other hand, it's sad that they were there for us to get, right? But the reason that happens is because of how profitable it is. And the traffickers are counting on our judgment. Do you remember in the date rape cases a long time ago, you'd hear on the news somebody got raped and how she was dressed? Maybe her skirt was short or her top was low. And then the defense would say, oh, I mean, my client, a Don Juan. It was consent. You could see that she wore this short skirt, or her hair was beautifully done, or she had makeup on. So obviously, no did not mean no. Obviously, she wanted my client. And it took us many years. When I started as a baby DA, this was what I was dealing with in court, right? And I remember thinking, but this wasn't about sex, really. This wasn't because, as I say, he couldn't get it somewhere else. And it took training. It took an open-mindedness. It took the jurors. You'll all be jurors one day. And so what is that training? What is that open-mindedness? To teach, just as we did then. Just this is exactly what I said to the jury. Does anyone here think that rape is about sex? Invariably, like a large percentage of the group would raise their hand. And then, because, you know, they did it because they couldn't get it anywhere else. Some would raise their hand still. And does anyone think that being an alcoholic is about being thirsty? Right? Nobody rapes because they can't get it any more than an alcoholic drinks because they're thirsty. There's something else going on, and we need to get our mind around what that is. And until we do, we are actually contributing to the epidemic. We are contributing to these numbers in a way other than the way you came here for today. Right? So by coming here today, there's certain things that occur. If you walk away here looking differently, you know, some people say that art, powerful art, just gives you a new way of seeing things, right? And then the movement was to do sort of performance art, you know, art in the fields, and those Christos, you know, would come with those big colored things and put them in meadows and so forth. So it's really just showing you that that meadow really was art. You just didn't notice it. We had to put some color in it to remind you that meadow is art, right? Because it's nature, it's pure beauty of nature. So really, what we're doing here today is trying to understand why we see things the way we do, why they're occurring in the way they are, and what we can do about it. So, we've already gone through that. Okay, so let's go back just to the perfect storm. So we have a perfect storm. I touched upon this last night. A confluence of factors have come, and it's this huge wave that we're on. And it's up to us. Are we going to get over the side of it? I am confident that we are. One of the reasons that gives me hope is just being here. Really, the number of people in that, I just gave myself goosebumps. The number of people in that room last night, to think that there's that interest, you know, is really wonderful. It's wonderful because these are our children. These are our children, and we are, as a community, you know, they say, I had somebody say, you know, what are they doing out there? Like, I don't even know they're there, right? Like, I don't even, are they there? Is this going on here? Are there children being sold? I'm like, yeah. Didn't you drive? Have you never driven past anybody on a corner? Have you never seen it? And they're like, oh, yeah, but I mean, those are prostitutes, right? And so we're going to learn about that. In my life, there's a rule. Can't say the P word. Can't say the P word because it just perpetuates a lot of the myths and stereotypes. But I want to go through now the perfect storm. The number one reason, and I've touched upon it, is the technology and the internet. I mentioned this last night, 24.5 million children between the ages of 10 and 17 are on the internet. My daughter has an iPhone. It is literally super glued to her hand. I don't know that it comes out even in the shower. I'm not kidding you. I see her sound asleep. Like when I was little, I would fall asleep like this. So I'm thinking, okay, what's up with the battery stuff? And, you know, but it's there. Constantly with her, and they're texting. You know, she knows that, like, she'll be grounded for life if I find her on MySpace or Facebook. She has none of those connections, right? Absolutely not allowed. But I'm telling you, they're texting, they're talking, they're surfing. She knows how to do more things technologically than I ever did at that age. You know, like, Mom, I was wondering if Santa could get me. And then, you know, we talk about what she saw on the internet in a shopping site. So it's powerful.
How old is your daughter?
12. She actually won it at her dentist office because she guessed the right number of gumballs in a jar. Community solutions.
How do you monitor where she's going online? How do you know?
We have a very strong relationship of trust. And we talk about it. And when I'll tell you, when I went to Sacramento to argue the rewrite of the child sex trafficking law, the human trafficking law in our penal code last year, my daughter and her entire class came with me. And afterwards, this is a sidetrack, but afterwards I said, no, it's okay. Afterwards I said, so what do you want to do about this? You know, because it's not just like a fun field trip. This is a real issue. So what are you and your friends going to do about this? She goes, you know, Mom, funny you say that. I was thinking about it. And you told me that the girls all have a $500 quota. And that's true. We'll talk about that in a minute. A $500 quota. And so I'm thinking that we should all, each one of us, we should raise $500 through a run or through babysitting. And then all of us give that money to the organizations that support them. And she goes, you know, they're on the track and they don't know that we care and we know what they're doing and we don't want them to feel bad anymore. I said, very good. So she said, Mom, how about we do this thing called Girls on Track?
Oh.
So next year, we're organizing a run. I was talking to, tell me your name again.
Doreen.
I was talking to Doreen. And, you know, we're looking for volunteers and trying to get young girls or women or men, anyone who wants to run as a showing of solidarity. And we have a sign-in sheet here. The sign-in sheet was not intended for the run, let me just say, but if you want to be connected, that's a way to be connected. There's so many ways to be connected, but please, everyone, go through and sign up on that sign-in sheet, and we'll keep you in the loop. Maya here, who is sitting in the front row with the PowerPoint, is our Heat Watch coordinator, and she links people. And she is a link to me. My phone number is linked to me as well, as is my email. There's no requirement that you need to go in directly to me. But Maya can really help facilitate a lot and organize a lot. So keep that in mind after you leave here today.
Can I make a weird side comment about technology?
Mm-hmm. Through what?
Through their web traffic, phone traffic. Google revenue base is about 45% off.
Well, I'll tell you that Congresswoman Jackie Speier, who is one of our congresswomen, was really spearheaded the effort to shut down Craigslist. And it's really incredible. It's important to remember that. She is a woman of action. She gets results. And what occurs with the shutdown of Craigslist, though, is other sites are there with their servers elsewhere. So many in the law enforcement community thought, you know, better to have it because you can at least get to it. And then others thought, no, let's shut it all down. And so go ahead.
For those who have pornography on their minds, there's an incredible report that you can go online and find. And I just Googled, I found it. I wasn't looking for it, and I was stunned. And it's out of Princeton University. And it is a report that has teeth. It's academic. There are 35 of the largest universities in the world, including Oxford, Cambridge, Stanford, Yale, Princeton, you know, the big universities, a two-year study, and they have presented their findings and recommendations to people and what they can do. And it's going to legislators, and it's just so exciting. So that is something. They're trying to, they're comparing the impact that they hope it will have to several years ago when the Surgeon General came out and talked about tobacco killing people. That pornography is such a scourge on our society. It is affecting every single family because of soft porn on TV and all the porn on the internet. But I would encourage people to just Google, you know, that the name of it is The Social Costs of Pornography, and it's the Witherspoon Institute out of Princeton University. And I'm getting it out to everyone that I know that I think can do something with it and get it to legislators. Jackie Spear should know.
Well, there you go. Seriously, there you go. And that, I think, is a... is Alana Paul here? Okay, well, her aide is actually at this conference. So I will pass that on. So, well, I am very sorry that we are having this issue with this machine. But it's the cords that aren't.
Can I ask you?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
If you tell me I can't do something, or you stop me from doing something, I'm just going to figure out another way to do it. So what if this Craigslist shut down?
So this,
I've got to figure out
okay,
way
so,
to
but so there, right, well, you don't need to, I mean, unfortunately, society doesn't need to figure it out because they're so plentiful. You heard the numbers. It's such a good business to have in terms of making money, right? And so the problem is that we allow businesses, and this is just my personal view, we allow businesses to derive profits from commerce in America. But their servers are, I'm just saying hypothetically, in Bosnia, right? They're not even here. So when you go to get a search warrant and you serve it on someone and say, I want to see your stuff, right? Show me the contents of your, you know, hard drive for this date range, for these account numbers, they don't have to comply with that. I have no jurisdiction to say, okay, court order them to produce it. So there is no jurisdiction in that regard. So let me just finish this one thought. It's important to be subject to service of process if you're going to do business here, so that the citizens have accountability, that you have accountability with the citizens, and the citizens have recourse. So that's one of my thoughts in terms of, but then, you know, you've got freedom of speech and freedom of where you want to sign up your business and all these different issues that exist that need to be worked out. But it's certainly something that is on the minds of the legislatures how to handle. And it's, you know, that's where technology can actually help us, because they can come up with ideas that are informed based on the technology to help create laws that reflect the reality of how you can access that technology. You see, so we just need to get more informed so that our laws are better, so that our action is more effective. Now, what is important to realize, and I think we all do with the internet, is that literally by the push of a button, we're sending things all over the place, and we're connecting people that weren't previously connected. And I touched upon this last night. You can have your child in the home and not know that your child is absolutely unsafe.
That's right.
And I have had some very, very horrifying cases as a result of that. Horrifying for the families. And the children that don't know what they're walking into. You know, our children, we all basically essentially take our brain out of our skull, put it on a shelf for a period of years in our youth, really. And but the irony is that we believe, despite the fact that there is just air in there, that we know everything, right? I mean, it's, do you know what I'm saying? Like, I remember when I was that age, I thought I knew everything. And my daughter rolls her eyes at me sometimes, like, Mom. And I'm like, excuse me? I'm 48. Why are you rolling your eyes at me? So.
Can you, I have 14, 16, 17.
Okay. There was two girls. And they had never been to the mall on their own before. And they were 13, and the mother had done everything she could to ensure the safety of her children, and she took them to the mall and said, okay, you guys go in there, and I'll wait for you outside. I remember my first concert, my dad waited outside. And, well, so the girls went in there, and unbeknownst to the mother, the girls had already been recruited online. And they thought they were meeting. And the recruitment isn't like, come and be my prostitute, right? That's not the recruitment. The recruitment is like, hey, how are you? You know, making you feel good. Come and, you know, let's have pizza and Coke. And they're thinking, how bad could that be? And there's two of us, right? We'll be okay. And so they went. And they did not go to a pizza parlor. they ended up going to a place where many, many people were waiting for them. And the parents couldn't find them for many weeks. And they were out on the street, and the parents literally didn't know where to go. And when they talked to some people, it wasn't even in this area where it occurred. When they talked to some people, you know, maybe asking for help from law enforcement at that time wasn't as enlightened as they are now in many regards, and said, you know, kind of just judged it like, oh, your girl's a runaway. It's like, you know, one of those bad girls, one of those naughty girls, just she'll come home, just, you know, that kind of a judgment, and couldn't figure out how to find their children. And then once that happens, really, you're irreparably scarred, but not irreparably forever, because you heal. And what happened is, yes?
So they met with teenage boys?
No, they were adult men. There was a recruiter who took them. I mean, you don't know the true age of the person that comes to get you, and it's never, you know, the Grinch who stole Christmas that's the recruiter, right? It's the cool person. It's the cool chick, the really hip chick that you want to hang out with at the mall, right? And she's like, hey, would you come meet my friend Joe? Want to go hang out with Joe? You know, or kids say, hey, that's a really cool sweatshirt. And she's like, oh, it's Juicy Couture. You know, things that teens notice that are media pumps, you know, that are out there. And, you know, MTV has glamorized. They think they're going to this really great party, and it's not the party they see. The song that wins the, I'm jumping ahead of myself here in terms of the order in which we're doing this, but just to give you an overview, the song that wins the Academy Award about ain't it, you know, it's hard out there being a pimp, and pimp your ride, and pimp juice, and pimp this, and pimp that, and ho, and all these words are now used as part of our language. And so it's not just an empty word. We're going to get there in a second. Oh, they are? Okay, yeah. So I'm good. I've got a form here, but I'm sorry that we're doing this. So if you could just track along. Now, the first reason we talked about is that technology, but there's one thing that I want to touch upon before we leave that. Heat knows no borders. So it's important to realize traffickers don't recognize it's just Fremont, or it's just Menlo Park, or it's just San Francisco, or it's just Alameda County, right? The internet sends you everywhere, everywhere. Somebody mentioned Disneyland, right? Absolutely. Now, what we see is the Super Bowl. We see Atlanta with the conventions. I went and testified before the Georgia Senate because they had a big problem, and they wanted to know, you know, what's your solution here? And we gave them the heat watch solution. So what do you do? You know, Hawaii. I mentioned this last night. I got to tell you, it takes a lot to surprise me. I was surprised. I got there, and first of all, it was surprising because as a kid, I remember going to Waikiki once with my family and having this vision of Waikiki, you know, and coming back and then actually opening my eyes and seeing Waikiki, you know, and I remember even seeing just what I remembered being girls walking around, you know, back and forth in high heels. Even then, and I just, it didn't really occur, I didn't process it. It didn't mean anything to me. It didn't mean anything to anybody because everybody there is walking past them. Everybody walks past these children. And that's part of the issue, right? And I went out there and I said, oh my goodness. I was expecting, at a minimum, it being just local girls. Right? But no, they were girls I heard from law enforcement from our area, young African-American girls. And it, and then I thought, you know, you're right. I mean, I can't get this bottle of water through that metal detector, but I can take somebody's child if I wanted to. So there's many ways in which we can raise consciousness. Even in airports, open your eyes. You know, because they're looking for bombs. They're looking for terrorism. They're looking for international terrorism. This is domestic terrorism, right? And truly, we can't put the burden on law enforcement. It is not law enforcement's sole responsibility to combat child sex trafficking or to solve every single crime. And guess what? They can't. You hear in the news, 80 police officers got laid off from Oakland not too long ago, right? They are understaffed. Law enforcement faces the same financial crisis that all of us do. And so we need to join forces. And you know, they say sometimes in hard times, you know, things really amazing things happen in hard times, right? Our society has really, as a society, pulled together in hard times. And it's too bad that it takes hard times to get us there. But this perfect storm, these are hard times. These are hard times for the youth of this country. And we're talking about how we can help them. But it's important to realize that there are no borders here. So, for example, I had somebody come up and ask me from Fresno. Is she still here? She said, I'm trying to get a response in Fresno to child sex trafficking. Does this apply to me? It's the Bay Area Heat Coalition, or Heat Watch is a regional program. Or Heat Watch is a program that can be applied in any jurisdiction. And you know what? This applies. What we're talking about applies no matter where you are. I had some other person say to me in a training of prosecutors, say to me, you know, I don't think I'll be there because we don't really have a child sex trafficking problem in our county. And I'm not going to say where, right? But I got to tell you, I said, well, do you have drug dealing? And they said, yeah, we have drug dealing. I said, well, if you have drug dealing, you definitely have child sex trafficking. So here's the last. Let's keep going. Mm-hmm. We'll keep going. Okay. This is from the State Department in 2004. The sale and purchase of children for sex is the second largest industry in our country and a multi-million dollar business expected to surpass the illicit trade in guns and narcotics within 10 years. Let that register. It's a big statement. Next. We're going to go to next, and then we will let them swap out for us. Okay. So, drugs, you can only sell drugs once. You can go ahead and just change it. We're used to not having a slide. This is the advanced class. They don't need slides. Yes. Criminal industries, because they're comparing it to drugs and guns, right? So oil or whatever, you know, for Saudi Arabia will be a larger one, but criminal industries, so drugs or guns. And, you know, they quantify that. But you look at, that's a pretty powerful statement. Somebody had their hand up. Yes. Okay, so there's two separate issues that you just raised, and I want to touch upon them because it's an important one. So, child sex trafficking is not prostitution, right? So when you have a child out there, that is child abuse, okay? That is what's called commercial sexual exploitation. So, prostitution is a phenomenon that occurs in the over 18 set. And some say that it should be legalized, right? I'm not in that group. Some say it should be legalized because it's a woman's consensual decision of what profession to enter. That's what some people say. And some people say, others say, no, it is the codification. To legalize it, you're just codifying. You know, creating a law that okays it. That's what. You're just codifying exploitation. You're codifying the denigration of women. And so, and it really, it's not a good career choice to have out there for our youth to say, okay, great. You know? So, yes. Absolutely.
That's right.
Right. Right, and and the other thing is I was teaching at UCLA with the head of trafficking for the Netherlands, where Amsterdam is. Very cool talking to this guy, and he showed us some footage of cameras on their main, like their red light district, where the women are in these glass rooms, and you can walk down and buy them. And everyone's walking down thinking, these are adult women, right? This is the point. I'm trying to distinguish prostitution from child sex trafficking. And you think that they're, oh, that's their job. It's legal here. Everyone's happy. Wouldn't make that career choice myself, but it's like, you know, a weird experience for some walking down that street perhaps, right? Okay. The footage that we saw showed, it sort of busted the myth that they're there on their own, that they're there because they want to be. It's their free choice. Because we saw the girls being escorted out at the end of the night when nobody was left in the walkway, like all the jeering people had left, right? And they were being escorted out almost by a line of men to, I can't remember if it was a Mercedes or a BMW. It was like the movies, really, being escorted out and then escorted back the next day. And that's one of the signs of trafficking, that people aren't allowed to leave, come and go is they, on their own. So you can't judge a book by its cover. And if we just believe what we see, we're doomed, right? I mean, isn't that part of growing up, is you know how to differentiate? Yes?
Are you dealing with this related to gangs?
Yes, and I'm about to get to that, so let me just jump to it. You, thank you for the perfect, you see, we've rehearsed this. I just want you to know. So, traffickers, gangs, organized crime. Why? Because it's lucrative. But really, what's at the gist of it? The gist of it is that a child can be sold over and over again, right? With dope, what do you got to do? You got to go get the money, go buy it. Then you got to cut it up. You got to, it's like, you know, very labor intensive, wrapping it, like wrapping Christmas presents. You got to wrap all these things to go sell. Then you got to go sell it. You can't use the internet to say, hey, I've got this much cocaine for sale, right? So you got to actually physically go out there and do the street level transactions or some other kind of backroom deals, drive-by shootings, turf wars. I mean, you hear about all the stuff that goes down around it. None of that is an impediment to child sex trafficking. You have free marketing with the internet. You have, what are your overhead costs for these girls that have to bring you $500 a day, rain or shine? Your overhead costs, maybe a McDonald's number 4 Happy Meal. That's it. Where do you stay? Oh, in the room that they had sex with 15 men in. And then, you know, and everyone stays there together. That way they're controlled. And then the next day it starts all over again. And that's your life. And you don't see a dime of it. So that's why it's so profitable. And the, and we saw about, just one second, let me finish this thought. We saw about trauma bonding. We've seen on the news all the time. Who here has gone to San Simeon, the Hearst Castle? Have you seen that swimming pool?
San Simeon,
the Hearst Castle. Patty, you know the Hearst Castle? They have a pool, San Simeon. It's on my, you know, the bucket list, that movie? It's my bucket list. Okay. So you may be reading about me like 15 years from now getting arrested because I'm just jumping in. Before I die, I don't care. I'm jumping in. They're going to have to arrest me. So, isn't it amazing? Right? No. So you think about that. She left that pool, right? Patty Hearst. And that's really where I think at least my first appreciation of the Stockholm Syndrome came from. But it actually comes from Stockholm, you know, in Europe. But it talks about trauma bonding. You know, we are an eclectic group here with no slides and music. I know. Well, you know, and I have to say that typically I just go through this format. It's much more structured than this, but I think there's a value in this because it's an exchange. This process, and I feel free, you know, and feel free to interrupt me anytime. And as I said, you know, if I can't, so what's your question?
This part is the part that we gotta change. This is rape. When, so shouldn't
we go to jail for life, not just the, but even the right, and we're gonna get there. Now, where are we time-wise? Right now, it's
We've got 25 minutes.
Okay. Well, the technical difficulties have certainly slowed us down. So let me just say this. That with the quota of $500 a day, and let's say a trafficker has 4 girls in his stable, they're looking at about $632,000 a year tax-free. Okay? So we're going to go through a few of these slides. So this talks about some of the math on 3 girls. Keep going, please. Asian massage parlors, very, very huge problem. And it's incredibly lucrative. You can look at the $800,000 a year estimate profit for just one house. Okay, please. And then we have Latino residential brothels that are that target the Latino male population. So the language that we use, terms like prostitute, it disguises the harm. So the language in terms of what do we do about it, and it's part of how you get the life. Because if your jurors are still using the word prostitute, I hope I made, and we'll get to that point in a minute, the child sex trafficking versus prostitute distinction. If we use words like prostitute, then we don't get that they're not prostitutes, they're prostituted, right? And that prostitute implies like a willingness, a voluntariness, a consent. Children under 18 cannot consent to sex legally. End of story, period. You can't consent. So how can you consent to sex and be a prostitute? You can't. It's a myth. And the only people that profit are the traffickers. Let's keep going. So we're going to quickly talk about these myths so we can start getting into the solution. Myth exists despite significant advances. And Mythbusters is the program where we go through and talk about the myths in much greater detail than we're doing here today. Okay, let's pop on in. NIMBY, I talked about that last night. Basically, that says it's not in my backyard, it's not happening. And we walk past these children, we drive past these children, and then we say, is it really happening here? Don't know what's happening here. And so it's really about how you see. So what's the most important thing, what's the simplest action thing you can do when you leave here? Open your eyes. That's the simplest action thing. And make sure your friends open their eyes. And we have flyers that you have. Copy those flyers, post them everywhere. Talks about it. Some of these facts that I'm giving you are in those flyers.
There's also a tip line at the bottom of
the... Right, there's a Heat Watch tip line. We have mothers call us on the tip line. And we very first call of the Heat Watch tip line was a mother who couldn't find her daughter and needed help bringing her home. And suspected that she was being sold, and we did.
So he is pretty much in this area. We came up from Southern California and want to try to kind of get going.
Like, Heat is a model that can be replicated in any and every jurisdiction. I have gone all over Hawaii, Georgia, New York, Texas. I've gone all over. Riverside County, it's huge. Riverside County is like bigger than Texas. Seriously, it's the largest place. Right, and it's, you know, so I get on planes and go.
And do they do it?
They are implementing it. Do they have a complete, it takes a process. You can't, it's not like, you know, sea monkeys.
I'm from Riverside, and we just, like, started a task force.
Yeah, your task force had me come. Right, so, okay, NIMBY, that's one of them. And we explain, like, you are the trainers now, right? So I could just jump right to the solution. But I would be doing you a disservice in terms of your action plan. Because this information that I'm giving you is your next dinner party conversation with the person sitting next to you. So, yeah. So, next. The myth of the scarlet letter. Okay. Our society, and this is a hard one to hear, but our society places a premium on being chaste. Right? And what is the impact of that? The impact of that is if you are not chaste, you are not worthy. If you are not chaste, you are not credible. It's not my view, but many subscribe to this view. And the movie, The Scarlet Letter, you know, the modern version with Demi Moore had the big alphabet on her in the movie. Well, that's the judgment. And that's a judgment that many people have. And what I'm talking to you about right now is what I ask my jurors. So, who here thinks fast girls deserve what they get? Like you make a bad, you know, you're out there, you're wild and crazy. No one here would say yes, right? Because that's not your mindset. But it's a training process that we have to do because as children, we make bad decisions. We're careless. As adults, we also make bad decisions. Here's what happens when sex comes into it. Okay, there's times when I park too far from my car and I leave my building too late at night, right? And it's dark and I'm running and I got 911 on my phone ready to hit it. Or so I'm going to get Vallejo CHP, by the way, but anyway. So that's what happens with the 911 call centers. You get like CHP call centers. Okay, so if I got robbed and I said, you know, he took $40 from me, nobody would question that. Not because I'm a DA, but because I just said, look, I'm crying, I got robbed, right? Okay, if I said, I got robbed, and he made me have sex with him, and he took my money, somebody might think, is she a prostitute? What's going on? Did she pay him? Really, I'm telling you, I guarantee you, the thought of there's something wrong with her story, if sex comes up, it gets interjected, right? Okay, that is gender bias. And that is also a society placing a premium on being chaste. I sit around thinking about this stuff, I'm sorry. But I think about this stuff and I'm trying to understand why this occurs so I can get to the decision makers, so I can get to the jurors. And you know, there very well may be a preference to be chaste, but that can't be a judgment that translates and actually empowers traffickers. So it's important. And that, and also then you realize that making a bad decision or being careless, you know, it's just like, it's like not seeing the curb and falling down. And my son didn't see the curb, fell down, and like, you know, had to get a whole bunch of stitches. I don't berate him or denigrate him because he was careless. I'm like, oh, honey, I'm so sorry you made a bad decision. I don't say that, but you know. Right? So, but that's really the response that we need to have when there's, you know, when a child, let's say, has run from home. But then there's many layers. It's not always a bad decision, right? It's not always a bad decision. Because what we don't know is perhaps the mother is in prison and the boyfriend is having sex with her every night. We would run from home too. So it's understanding. It's understanding. But the judgment with sexual activity, and I got to keep moving, so hang on to that thought, because we know each other. We can talk later. Now, consent. We already talked about that. They can't, and we're just going to keep flying through this. It's legally invalid, right? And the next one. What may look like consent is not, in fact, consent or choice or willingness to do it. So what I said is it's not always a bad decision. Remember that? As a child, when somebody says, hey, you know, I love you, like your first love. You remember your first love? And like you'd move heaven and earth for your first love. Everyone almost remembers their first love if it was a good experience. Even if it was a bad experience, we can look back and reflect upon it about how we were tricked or how we were fooled. And children are so easy to fool and trick. Look at who gets targeted, right? Vulnerable people get targeted. People that are easy to fool or trick. The same people, you know, you talk about children when they get molested. You know, it's why are children targeted? Because they're vulnerable. Because they don't speak up. And so they're easy prey. Foreign nationals, easy prey in this country because you're in a foreign land. You don't even know where. It's like me trying to find this room in this. I'm like asking everybody, excuse me, where is, you know. So it's very difficult when you're in unfamiliar surroundings. Children are taken, they're no longer in their home. They're now moved to a city they've never been in or a neighborhood, you know, their parents said don't go to. Or a place that they just ran to because they wanted something that was safe. And for them, maybe that McDonald's number 4 Happy Meal was safer than what they had in their home. It was a sense of what they perceived to be maybe family. So there's all kinds of things that go down to explain what happens. Now, the next one. The control that exists because of how little pressure it takes to reach this population. And you don't really need force, but I'll tell you, because the trafficking is so profitable now with the money that's out there, that gorilla pimping is occurring. And gorilla pimping isn't the animal in the zoo, it's the warfare tactic, where actually you're just grabbed off the street. Seen it. It's, one news agency remarkably had footage of it. And I've talked to girls who've been victims of gorilla pimping. And then there's the, you know, what we talked about before, which is the boyfriend pimp. The, hey, baby, I love you, you know, can you just, we'll get married one day, but I don't have money for rent, can you just help me? That's the boyfriend, the Romeo pimp. A little pressure goes a long way. And you can't see the coercion. It might look voluntary on the outside, but it's not. You know, it's not voluntary on the outside. Okay, next. So we know that it's not a choice for the reasons we just talked about. And that, as I said, they are prostituted. And the word prostitute doesn't describe this population. And, you know, the whole fast and loosed myth that we were talking about, that somehow they're fast and loosed and savvy. So that's not true either, because actually studies have shown that when you are the victim of this type of trauma, that it you suffer from an arrested development. You're actually less savvy. You're more afraid. You question more than you otherwise would. Okay, next. This is what happens when the criminal justice system gets involved. Because a traditional victim, okay, and there's no judgment in the word that I'm using, I'm talking about how it's perceived publicly, knows that they've been victimized, have been coerced, says, I was in the alleyway, I got raped. I was in the bank, I got robbed. They come in, sit in the stand, explain what happened, and leave. That is not what you have here with the vast majority of girls that are victims of child sex trafficking. It doesn't happen that way. Many don't speak up. Many don't feel empowered to speak up or supported to speak up, which is why I say it takes a village to rescue a child and prosecute a trafficker, because there needs to be support mechanisms in place to empower them to speak up. Just as we had with rape when it first came up. We heard of Bay Area Women Against Rape, or rape advocacy is what happened around that, to empower women who were raped to come forward. And so we now see that, and it's really fabulous, and I support it so much. And we have actually an advocate in our HEAT unit in the Alameda County DA's office that's dedicated to this work. So, next. And these are the facts that we had reference to earlier. Thank you for sharing that with us. But you can see she's right on, 83% are runaways, and you can see the numbers in terms of having been sexually assaulted there. That's what a study of 269 youth showed in our area. Okay, next. So it explains why this victimology, these myths, and it all explains why we have such a hard time in the courtroom. And I just want to read something to you, even though I know we're so short on time, but we'll make it up. It's a poem that a girl wrote who was being trafficked. And it's a whole poem, and I'm going to read you just a part of it so you understand the victimology. All my life I've been rejected. All my life I've been neglected. All my life I've been disrespected. All I ever wanted to be was protected. You can run, but you cannot hide. Sometimes I feel like I can't take it anymore. Growing up as a kid, I never dreamed I'd be a whore. My voice has no sound, no matter how loud I shout. I found my way in, but I can't find my way out. I have my hopes, but they are consumed by doubts. I feel like a prisoner of words unsaid. Just lonely, feeling locked away in my head. I should start to speak, but I stop and stay silent in the fear that you may get violent. That's the victimology. That's the challenge in the courtroom. That's why it's so hard to ensure that they're on the train when the train pulls into the courtroom. That explains, so you can hear the low self-esteem. And a trafficker reads this poem and says, pray, pray, with an E, with an E, P-R-E-Y. So, easy to trick, easy to coerce, they don't stand a chance. So much money, Stockholm Syndrome, perfect crime, internet, free. I mean, like anybody starts a business here, you need to have a marketing assistance. Not with this. It's on the internet for you for free. Next. Thanks. Popular culture. We've touched about it. Skip it. They're organized and we're not. Many people are just figuring out there's a problem. This is a great first step. Here's a business plan a trafficker wrote in connection with a case in our office. It's called Keep It Pimpin'. Discover hoes from all over. Jailhouse, small cities, nationwide, got hoes waiting to be discovered. Stay in high pursuit looking for a prostitute. Take it from the city streets to the concrete streets to the executive suites, taking my game to the next level. I mean, get in touch with Big Al out of Florida. Attend the Players' Ball in Vegas. Cross-country pimping. Establish my name interstate, international. More serious about my money and future. I heard another, that's the first line, more serious, like, you know, your thesis sentence for your business plan. Saw some footage on a pimp talking about how he had hobots. Hoes is the street slang for prostitutes, and bots are robots. And he goes, my hobots on money. Just programmed to just make money. So that's how they're thinking. And they have the internet, and they're talking to one another, and they're not doing drive-by shootings, right? They have networks. We have the track, which is what happens in a city, just one sec, and then we have the circuit, which is what happens around the country. Yes? A lot of slang? Yeah, mm-hmm, yeah. So. Very young. I've had a lot of my pimps have been like 19. And really, but I'm telling you, 21 years as a prosecutor, never seen a more manipulative criminal. Seen murderers, seen rapists.
Best child psychologist ever.
Yeah, best child psychologist ever, yes. There is. There's a lot of them. There's a lot of them. So we're gonna get to... I can tell you more of those sources afterwards. So next, the solution. The solution is, and how much time do we have for the solution? Six? Okay. Well, if anyone needs to leave, I promise not offended. Totally understand. We didn't anticipate the technical difficulties we had. So here we go. The solution that we are proposing is a five-part solution, and it's based on two concepts that counter they're organized and we're not. One is it takes a village. It takes a village, as I said, to rescue a child and prosecute a trafficker. What does that mean? We have to have a collaborative model, a multidisciplinary model. Community members, critical part. Law enforcement, community, critical part. Service providers, community, critical part. Second, we cannot function as silos into ourselves. We cannot. We all have to come together. We got to open up our doors and work together. And when you think about the internet, what has it done? It has taken our siloed mentality, right? You look at everyone's like, you know, you can't even figure out where to go in the DMV, right? Because it's a different agency and they have their procedures, right? Law enforcement is the same way. One city has their jurisdiction, another has theirs, and then there's walls. And there's, as far as they're concerned, no connection. Like if this person, even though this started here, goes there, oh, it's your case. Your case. I don't have jurisdiction, it's your case. Right? And then what happens to that case? Because is that information from this officer had going with the case? No. Okay? When a child is in a city and goes to another city, does anyone know? No. Right? And so heat knows no borders. That's what I'm talking about. What do we lose in the process? We lose evidence in the process. We lose children in the process. We can't find traffickers in the process. So how do we solve that? That means we have to be a village, right? Which is saying come together. But we have to be a village that is ever expanding. So Los Angeles, you're in my village. We're in the same village. Because on a larger scale, these are all of our children. And a child that I see is going to come to you, is going to go through LA, is going to go to Vegas. And it might not be the same child. It'll be somebody else's child. Right? But it's going to still be a child. And when that child comes there, have a program in place. We have a thing that started in our office called the SPA, S-P-A, Safe Place Alternative. Concept we came up with right off the bat. So that there's a place for them to go. I would love to see spas all over the country. And I wanted to have something that was a little sexy in terms of a name and cool so the kids would go. You know, and maybe one day we can do manicures and hair weaves. right? But right now, it's you know, services and support in a safe place to be. And it's a walk-in. And it's not an overnight. Ideally, it would be you'd have an urban overnight and a safe place in the country. So the spa, an option. A safe house, an option. And then this program. So have these systems in place. Because you know when you go to a new city, you see, oh, it's McDonald's. It's the same McDonald's that I have in my city. Right? Go to Paris. McDonald's. Right? So if we have some things that are common, then we're connecting a country that is a foreign land to anyone that leaves their own hometown. So that's an important thing to recognize. And to recognize that though we need to come together, we have to have a regional response. So what is the program? Five parts. Part one, community involvement, which is what we're doing here. Part two, law enforcement training and involvement. Part three, how we charge our cases. Part four, changing our laws. Part five, services. Now, we've talked a lot about what we call Heat Watch Neighborhoods, which is the pro. Oh, we got to keep going. I'm sorry. I thought you were tracking me.
That's the blueprint.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, keep going. Okay, here we go. We've talked about Heat Watch Neighborhoods. Heat Watch Neighborhoods is what we're saying. Open your eyes in your neighborhood. Know what the role of the internet is. Tell your neighbors about it. Instead of a neighborhood watch program, start a heat watch program. Start a heat watch program in your city. Start a heat watch program in your neighborhood. Start a heat watch program in the parts of the town where you know this exists or where you hear reports that it exists. What does heat watch mean? It means informing the community members in those neighborhoods how they can help. Those flyers, post those flyers up. If you need a template to change it so you can put, let's say, a number that works in your area, like the national hotline number that's on here. You can, I'll give you the template. You can change it. Okay, next. We just talked about how profitable it is, but it's important to explain that to everybody so that you see, well, you know, it really is, it really, because when you start talking about money in our society, they're like, oh, it really is a crime. Right? But some people think that way, right? So you got to approach a problem from many different ways. Like, they might not care about the victimology stuff, but they'll care that the traffickers are getting so rich, right? So you have to take many tactics. Next. We cast a very wide net. We talked about this before, right? You can't just think of the one person that goes out there. There's a whole organization involved. There's the pimp, there's the enforcer, the person with the gun. There's the girl that does the recruiting, or there's the guy that does the recruiting. She's called the bottom girl. So there's all these different levels involved, and they all are responsible for the end game of that conspiracy. And that's how we charge our cases. Next. We think outside the box. Let me just tell you this. You think about burglary, right? Well, many of these people take the children into a home and maybe have sex with her to break her in, right? A rape. So what happens when you enter a home with the intent to commit a felony inside? We think of burglary, right? And everyone thinks, oh, my stuff got taken. No. Burglary is any felony inside. So we charge them with burglary when they take a child inside a house because they're entering a home with that kind of intent to do something wrong in there. And kidnap. We think you got to go from West Coast to East Coast. No. It depends why you went to the secondary location. And under the law, as little as 9 feet has made a difference. Extortion. This is really big. It was just in the October issue of Essence magazine. Our last two jury trials. Because, you know, if we go to trial and these girls are on the train when the train pulls into the courtroom, our traffickers in our last two jury trials looked at life imprisonment and they got it. Why? Because we charged innovatively outside the box. Because our state human trafficking law isn't where it should be. So I'm going this year on behalf of the Alameda County DA's office in connection with Assembly Member Sandre Swanson to Sacramento to try again to change our state's human trafficking law. The state's human trafficking law right now has an ambiguity in it that seems to suggest perhaps you need force, coercion, or violence, a proof of it, to prosecute somebody for selling a child. And the federal law doesn't require it, but our state law has that ambiguity. So I rewrote it to reflect the federal law. Last year, I made it past the most difficult gatekeeper, which was the Public Safety Committee. I made it past all of the groups that would complain, ACLU, you know, you name it. We had a variety of groups that complained. But they didn't, because we found a way to write it that made everyone happy.
Yes.
Okay? And I'll tell you, one of the ways, one of the things that had to be excised from it was John's. And so you take baby steps. If I can ensure that at least everyone else goes down on it, great. So we got stuck last year in appropriations. Why? Because a $250,000 price tag was put on the legislation at the same time that Chelsea's law went through. I think it was $3.5 million. So please, this year, support AB 90 is the number. It's the rewrite of Penal Code Section 236.1. We will send you an announcement on this stuff. And that's why the sign-in sheet is critical. Okay? So, really, you know, come on up. You're allowed. I took my daughter's, as I said, sixth grade class there. So,
if we just ask where the sign-in sheet is.
Yeah, where is the sign-in sheet? Thanks. Maya, can you switch? Maya. Maya. Okay. Okay. No, but we'll keep you posted. Okay, so we created a program called Safety Net to try to catch the children where we get on the phone or meet in person as soon as a child comes in the system to make sure that all the different parts of the village, all the moving parts from social services to probation to the police to the DA, we're all on the same page catching that child. Next. And we, let's go, we've already talked about that. We have now, because of the internet, taken this program, this Heat Watch program that's this five-part program, right? We talked about legislation. We've talked about all of this. We've taken it broader, wider, regionally. We got funded by the federal government, by the Department of Justice, only agency west of the Mississippi to get it. I'm very proud of that. And our office got funded to coordinate a regional response to child sex trafficking. So Heat Watch, and you have a blueprint out there in your packet, right? So that's what you can look at. The Heat Watch mission addresses, so the regular Heat Watch program is the village component. Regional Heat Watch takes it, you know, as this guy said, regional, right? We're getting organized. We're branching out to mirror the patterns, the movement of trafficking. Next. And Maya is a single point of contact that exists. I asked when I was writing this grant, a law enforcement officer, I said, what do you need? Like, he was a cop, Jim Salita, you know him. I said, what do you need, Jim? Like, what would be the most important thing? He goes, like a single point of contact where all of us check in with her or him and a database. So we are creating a database. We're going to have an online bulletin board. But we have huge funding issues, right, as anyone does. So we're, you know, it's loving hands, really, that's putting this together. But to have an online bulletin board where we could all talk together about this issue is what we hope to have. And we have all sorts of people volunteering to help, you know, people have different skill sets to bring it together. A resource guide that's being published with contacts throughout the Bay Area, and we hope to expand that so we can give you our model. You can start creating your resource guide, and then we'll give you ours, you give us yours, and then that's how you build up. It's like Legos, right? We need to Lego this. And then we have trainings. Mark this in your calendar. Fall of 2012. Did I get the part of the year right?
For
our conference. National conference, fall of 2012. You're all invited.
Well, 2012. Let's just say 2012.
Okay. And monthly trainings. Next. So we've created BAC. And BAC stands for the Bay Area Heat Coalition. Doesn't mean you can't have a BAC in your area. And BAC is... The genesis is the Bay Area, but partners from all over the country are a part of it. We have partners in Washington, D.C. that are part of BAC. We have partners from all over that want to strategize with us and come up with a regional solution. We have a toolkit that we're going to be making and releasing in 2012 at our conference. And the toolkit will have all of the components, from memorandums of understanding that you need to have signed with different agencies, to a fleshed out blueprint. Julie Posadas Guzman is in the room here somewhere. She is a consultant helping us put together this toolkit so that you can take it. And I'm envisioning just a, really like you just do it. It's like open it and all the different parts are in there, and then it's the community element is so important, the collaborative element is so important, because once that's in place, the toolkit is nothing. It's just like, it's the recipe. But you got to have the structure in there first. So BAC reaches out regionally, and it solves all the issues that the internet creates, like identifying victims and traffickers. You know, by linking partners throughout a region, there's no advantage in the movement because there's someone keeping track of it and people are talking about it. So we are going to leave it at that.
Can I get one question?
Mm-hmm. Yes. No, you know, everyone, I mean, ideally, you know, okay, so ideally you'd like, you know, like a bank robbery, right? The bank video cameras. And in some agencies, I mean, there's no law that says the evidence has to be a certain way. You know, all evidence is you have documentary evidence, circumstantial evidence. It just depends on how good that evidence is, and your common sense tells you that. So surveillance would work. You know, if there's somebody that can lay a foundation for it, so it's saying that it wasn't fabricated, or, you know, Steven Spielberg creation, right? So there's different issues of authenticity. Maybe that's what they were getting at. But certainly, if I put up a camera to document who came in and out of here, we would know that people were coming in and out of here, and that would be admissible evidence. So,
can I just say, some of you are getting ready to leave. If you'd leave an evaluation with our ambassador out at the door before you leave, and there's still a little wrap up, make sure you sign the sheet that's going around and leave the evaluations.
Perfect. So leave the sheet there, and then please, again, like he said, thank you so much, leave your finished evaluations right at the corner.
Okay, so action plans before we leave. Yes. We talked about, who remembers the action plan I said if you do one thing? What was that? I said it earlier on. Eyes. Okay, so we can all do that as of right now, right? Okay, so let's talk about what's the next time frame of an action plan that's reasonable. Should we say 6 months?
Well, not to interrupt Charmaine, but one thing we're going to be organizing very soon is, especially for community members, we're going to have a quarterly meeting. And our next quarterly meeting is going to include community members. That's why I want your information on the sign-in sheet, so I can contact you and include you there, so that then we can start creating those heat watch neighborhood programs.
Right, and that was why I mentioned 6 months. Because in that time frame, you will be invited to attend a regional BAC meeting. We're having a preliminary one that just sets up structure. And so at the second meeting, you will be invited to participate as part of the community or in whatever group you belong.
Do you have any structure yet to train people who like to be victims and are going to be facing the court?
Yes, we have a victim advocate. Yes, well, there's no training per se for court, but you explain the process to them, and there's an entire advocacy program that exists to sort of demystify court for victims and empower them to go there. And so we do have many different training programs that we can bring to your neighborhood. So maybe an interim between now and then is assess in your neighborhoods, in your communities, what is needed, and reach out to us to come to your neighborhoods to help you implement your program with an organization that you can affiliate with there, or come to us. If you can't do that, come to us for the BAC meetings, or do both. Another thing you can do, and that's my last thing that I'm saying, as an action plan, is be active with regard to the legislation. Yes. Because at a minimum, our laws need to reflect the reality of what's going on. And you have groups here, like Californians Against Slavery, and you also have the opportunity, for example, with AB 90, to come and write and support the passage of AB 90 so that it doesn't get stuck in any one of these committees, makes it from the Assembly into the Senate, and becomes a law that protects our children. There's many ways to get involved. These are some ideas. If you want to engage further on this, I'm here after the class. I can talk to you. I apologize profusely for the technical difficulties that we had. But I think, ironically, it gave us, at least I feel it, a better connection to who you are, and I am grateful for who you are, because I see in each one of you a real eagerness and a genuine desire to do something. And I just want you to know that we are here to partner with you.
Thank you.